Yeah, I talk on the internet, and Twitter killed my blog. No, stone dead. You can just look at the number of things I posted in like 2008, 2009, and then when I got it on Twitter, it was just sort of, oh, I can actually get my ideas out in real time rather than, because what would happen is you just sort of sit on them and ferment, and then it'd come out as a block of thought, sort of three paragraph thing.
The funny thing is, though,
that I miss having ideas like that. I just don't have them anymore.
See, the thing is that my blog was never about anything that I talk about on Twitter. It was all farm stuff, and I never talk about the farm stuff on Twitter.
But you've got a podcast for talking about farm stuff.
Yeah, I guess so.
Every couple of guests, you're talking to somebody about, you know, your finger limes or your bees or.
I think it's going to die a natural death, though.
What, the podcast or the?
Nah, cheesy. It's just, it's not the same with Sal, and some of the guests have been pretty uninspiring. No, I'm not super keen on being just an interviewer. I don't know whether I'm that good an interviewer. Like the ones that I'm really interested in, I'm good, but some of them are, yeah. There's a million podcasts out like that.
So. With Sal, it was just generally you two, or did you tend to have?
No, it was only ever us two, and it was like it even more fucking random and chaotic than this one is.
So what I suppose what you'd need if you wanted to do a hybrid model is to have an offsider who you could go and meet these people and talk to them about stuff, because you might get different questions.
Yeah,
you might go in different spaces.
Like the chef at like the chef at Gerard's, I've got the same sort of rapport with. Like I've sort of done four or five with him, but he's like he's not sort of celebrity chef level, but he's definitely close to that level.
He might be getting out of your price range.
It's not so much that, it's just fucking hard to get him. He was Queensland Chef of the Year last year, so you know he's running a fucking very, very successful restaurant.
You have to burn a steak really well for that. Think of all the chefs in Queensland who were really good. Think about all the beer that in Queensland that's really good. Channel 9 News were making a big deal out of some research grant going to some Queensland researchers to try and find out how to make beer taste better. I've got a suggestion: don't brew it in fucking Milton.
That's always a helpful thing. No. Look,
you can drink it in Milton. The Scratch is just over the road from the brewery there. They've got good Brisbane. Beer. None of it's brewed in Milton.
Brisbane food's pretty good, mate. I'll stand and defend Brisbane food. Much better than Brisbane beer. I'm not going to stand and defend Brisbane beer.
No, it's made from the water. It's made from the runoff. Imagine testing that fucking river.
Yeah, that's well, just fucking test the effluent that comes out of the Regatta Hotel on a fucking Friday night.
Test the effluent that comes out of Parliament House. Oh, so this is from this. We mentioned this in the other podcast. Some idiot fucking government brain fart that they were going to make people's welfare dependent on their piss tests, and they were even considering fucking testing the effluent of suburbs. But the problem is they'll probably just find out that all the expensive suburbs can afford all the expensive drugs. And I was thinking about this in the context of, and this is very much in the Venn diagram of things we like, not piss, I mean, or drugs, Your Honour, but beer and festivals, because there was a plan afoot, and I believe this is coming true, from a Danish brewery. They're brewing a beer called Pilsner, which is a Pilsner brewed with, guess what?
Oh, I did see this, yes.
So they're not brewing it with piss, but they are brewing it from barley that has been germinated with piss, specifically piss from Roskilde, the big music festival in Denmark. This makes me wonder, though, how much residue is going to be in the piss from Roskilde? And is that going to affect the barley in any way?
Oh,
I mean, there's a great Pilsner that Garage Project here make called Pills and Thrills. I reckon there might be a bit of that going on.
There was a cheese made with, I can't put it any other way, with vaginal yeast.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that. There's a yogurt, and it does not fucking work because it's totally the wrong. It's not a lactose fermenting yeast.
Mm.
For those who know, I mean, you'll know this is a fucking cheesemaker, but it's not a lactose fermenting yeast. So it's not, all you're hoping for is there's a wild yeast somewhere hanging about that might actually do the job.
Yeah. Look, I know people like being innovative, but that's probably taking it a little bit too far.
That's not right. And anything that's come out of a portaloo at a festival.
No.
I mean,
have you been to a festival?
You would agree in Australia. Anything. The weather's better the weather's probably colder in Denmark, but I have to say the stench of a hot portaloo at a festival, I've never dry retched quite so much as being downwind from a I'm actually feeling quite sick just talking about it. Very few things are quite as rank as that. And the thought that people fuck in them.
Oh, that's just...
Imagine how... I mean, Rule 34 and all that. People get off on all kinds of shit, but
yeah.
I can't imagine anything... That's a special kind of fuck. I'm that keen to bump my uglies. I'm going to get it on in a hot portal at a festival.
Mm. Yeah, I'll pass on that one. Thanks. Yeah.
Although I was reminded that I was trying to think of the weirdest beer I've ever drunk at a festival, and I do remember at one home bake they had Tui's Old, so I was drinking Tui's Old in a can while watching the Hoodoo Gurus, which I thought was. That was a cultural experience that I wasn't expecting to have at home, but it felt more Bruce Hill RSL, to be perfectly honest.
Yep. Dear.
That's so a sidelight. Should we talk about your favourite band, the Gorillaz?
Oh, man.
That good, huh?
Fuck.
So the Gorillaz are a collective of artists and musicians. Most notably headlined by Damon Albarn, formerly of Blur.
I'm blaming the Oasis influence in this one.
So there's no Oasis influence in this at all, apparently. We checked into this because there was some suggestion that Noel Gallagher was involved, and the main reason this came up was because Liam Gallagher tweeted something to the effect of, that fucking gobshite from Blur may have turned Noel into a girl, but I'll fucking sort him out the next time I see him. Which was a commentary on the performance of one of the songs from this album, On Top of the Pops, I think. So Noel, we couldn't find Noel in the list of collaborators, because this album, as we put it out last week, has a long list of guests and collaborators. And he's not credited. But the song he's on is called We Got the Power. And having listened to the song, I don't blame him for not being credited, because it's shit. It also has Jenny Beth from The Savages on it, from Savages, who we reviewed reviewed last year, who are a very angsty, viciously unhappy feminist noise rock collective. And they're singing twee fucking pop bullshit. And basically, all of them have lost credibility from being, and Noel Gallagher didn't have a lot of fucking credibility to lose, but.
This is about as bad as R&B bullshit as you can get.
Yeah.
Seriously, this is
fucking R&B pop.
Bullshit. Look, I went back and listened to the first Gorillaz album. It's quite interesting. It's fairly poppy, but it's fucking interesting.
Yeah.
This is not fucking interesting.
Yes.
This is...
What is the great pop song on this album? You think back to those Gorillaz albums that had Clint Eastwood and a whole lot of songs whose titles I forget, but you know the hooks. They're well crafted. They're interesting. They're quirky. This was just a festival of fucking auto tune and shitty Casio tone bleeps, and it was just. And so I looked into what the concept of this album was, because, you know, I try to dig a bit more deeply than listening to the tunes and going, fuck, this is shit. So Damon Albarn's brief to his collaborators was, this was in kind of mid-2016. It was sort of trying to imagine the weirdest, most unpredictable thing happening that changes everything around the world. I wanted everyone to imagine the emotional response to something as crazy as Donald Trump becoming president. Then it happened. And, yeah, I don't think they captured whatever it was they were trying to capture. But he also said that he was trying to produce a really great pop album. It didn't fucking do that either.
Well, the thing is, right, you look at the collaborators on the first one. There are a whole bunch of people that people like you and I know, like Dan the Automator. But
Talking
they're not,
Heads were on that. Yeah, did a lot on that.
But they're not big mainstream names. Look at all the collaborators on this one. There's fucking Kanye. There's Harry Styles. They're all fucking big fucking names.
I didn't even notice those guys. I saw like Vince Staples.
Vince Staples or whatever his name is. But
Carly Simon's on there. She probably thinks the song's about her.
They're all big names. They're not. I don't know. It seems like a marketing exercise more than something about trying to make interesting music.
He set out to make a pop album, and he tried to shortcut by dragging in big names. But he didn't make a very good pop album. And he also completely failed in whatever remit he was trying to create with you know, this is supposed to be a post-apocalyptic party album. It was just drudge. Mm. It was just dull. It had nothing. Yeah. My note was, is this any good? I don't really like Gorillaz that much anyway, but I do know... And I know I'm mostly through the singles, but I know the singles were more than just catchy pop songs. But, I mean, Grace Jones' guest bit is probably the least worst. That's just because it's got an interesting discordant guitar thing that they pin it off. A little bit like Harmonic Generator by the Datsuns, but nowhere near as good. The De La Soul joint is bad.
It's
properly
terrible.
Asterisk
it's fucking
bad.
Terrible. Every week when you do the show noting, you send me a message about this and say, you know, what songs do you want for the playlist? And I've been really brutal with this year. I've been thinking, okay, what songs at the end of the year do I actually want to listen to?
Yeah. If I've got the playlist on random, I don't want to hear anything that makes me.
Yeah. I'm not skipping. Yeah. I don't want to skip anything this year. Whereas, you know, last year I sort of treated this playlist as sort of like, oh, okay, well, make sure you include something off every, you know, the best song of every album. And then you get to the end of the year and you're like, fuck, this is a terrible song. Especially when you get such good songs like the other songs we've got on the playlist. It's so discordant. And I can tell you right now, there's fucking nothing on this album going in the playlist.
There's nothing on this album I remember. I can't remember any of it. It was just all fucking
for all the big names and marketing and the fact that this band is fucking huge, like this is a bigger disappointment for the fact that you've got all these people involved. Like, try fucking harder, please. Well, because and especially in contrast with the album we're going to talk about next.
Yeah. So just to finish with the Gorillaz. The album's called Humans with a Z, and half the song titles have a Z in them. It's appropriate there's heaps of Zs in it because that's basically the effect it has on it.
That's right. Man, this was hard not to Bezo this album. There was quite a few times my finger was hovering over the fucking skip button, and if I wasn't at work where I just wanted some background noise, then I did not give this the headphones treatment. If I'd been listening to this on headphones, I would have fucking skipped halfway through about six of these songs.
Yeah, I did it twice.
Once and a half
on the headphones, because the second time through I was actually paying attention to it more, and I was actually going. No, that makes it worse,
not better.
No, I actually gave this every opportunity, and it wasn't good. No. It was properly not good.
Mm.
Now, we have already reviewed the next album, which is DJ Format and Abdominal, new album, Still Hungry is the title of the album, is it not? Is
that it is. It is. It was.
You reviewed it by saying, by adding the pair of them and saying, your album is fun. And I retweeted that. So that's actually our entire review of this. We're going to turn over the next 20 minutes to advertising. For the album, because we like it.
Look, these go, well, Format and Abdominal together are fun. Now, the thing is that I find interesting about this is we talk about, like, because these guys are not young anymore. They're not, and I wouldn't call them an older band because they haven't been a band for that many albums.
Yeah. But, I mean, their first album together was only 12 years ago.
Yeah.
It was, if you can't join and beat them, wasn't it?
Yeah. And then I think he worked with mostly someone else on the next album.
I think this might be their third album together.
Mm.
But not certainly not Format or Abdominal's third album.
No.
So Format's a British producer, very much in the sort of golden age of hip hop sort of thing. Lots is just beats and loops. None of this fucking none of this let's get the orchestra in shit that your mates the Hoods are into these days. Just find old funk and soul and and play with them.
If you want a calling card of what their shit is about, Dirt is a song that explains what the type of music they make is and why they still make it like that. It's not fucking clear. It's not clean. It's fucking
sterilized. It hasn't had fucking sanitizer wipes on it. Actually, the intro Appetizer, which as you pointed out, actually reuses that hook from Theophilus Thistler from Sonic Animation. Funny story behind that, the vocalist from Sonic Animation's dad was in the band in Canada.
No way. I did not know that. That is cool.
That ding, 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 ding. I'm getting the tones wrong. You know that riff from Theophilus Thistler, which gets reused in that intro.
Any Australian from our generation would hear that intro from DJ Four. And, like, you know, 90% of the people in the UK would have no fucking idea what it is, but, like, that song was played so much on Triple J.
Well, I was wondering, because it was a Canadian band and Abs is a Canadian, whether he might be, you know, saying this is, you know, or it might just be that he heard.
But there's also songs kicking around that just hip-hop guys like to sample. Like, that there are just that particular songs with
the sample integration on this is amazing. I mean, running over the top of what you're saying, but the way he integrates that sample with the sample immediately before him, which is from a different fucking song. I went back and listened to the song that it's from, and it's got nothing to do with it. But he managed to fuse them together so that it felt like the same fucking sample that he'd managed. And this is just in the intro to the album. Yeah. It's not even a track of its own.
Format is like, he is like the classic old school hip hop artist.
Analog fucking. Yep.
It'd all be done on an MPC, you know, take the sample, loop it in, you know, Lazy Grey would be, and I'm going to get onto that a little bit later, but Lazy Grey would just be smiling listening to this album, because this is the way hip hop was made when I was really fucking deep into hip hop, you know.
Well, this is, and this is the hip hop I like as well. This is old Beastie Boy shit. This is, this is golden era hip hop. This is fucking golden age. Old white man hip hop for certain age old white men. Well, you know, I'm not saying it's just white men who like this stuff, but it tends to be our jam.
Okay. I'm gonna touch on something that happened in the hip hop world in a second, but the last thing I want to say was Abdominal also has this wry sardonic humor that works well as you get older. Like
he puts a lot of effort into his wordplay.
Yeah, he's always had that. Like, if you listen to, but even there's a single before that. The what's the name of the song? I'll find it for you. But he has that sly sense of humor that works as a middle aged man. Do you know what I mean? Like,
the lyrical content of this is much more middle aged. White dude. I mean, middle-aged Jewish dude, let's be fair. Because he does point that out. He says, like, I'm a white rapper, but technically I'm a Jewish rapper And that is important, but we'll set that aside for the moment while we talk about. And he gets into a whole lot of issues around cultural appropriation and acceptance of white rappers into the. And he gets quite a intelligent rumination on it that all fits into his bars, which is really quite cool. Although most of the lyrical scope of this album is quite intimate and domestic. It's about him, his day to day, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Sending invoices, hanging out with his girl on the couch, and not really feeling like tearing Sucker MC's a new one because he's sort of
this album just reminds me of an Instagram that Trials from Funkaus did. Like, you know, Funkaus are this like legendary sort of tear it up party crazy
absolute
boy
pisshead fucking. They're punk. They're sort of the punk. They're sort of the Friends or Rom style of hip hop. Yeah, that's the kind of mentality.
You know, like my sort of enduring memory and like my first memory of the Funkaus is them playing at my hip hop festival, playing half of their first song, which was their biggest song, and Trials halfway through, completely drunk, going, "Sorry guys, I can't remember the lyrics. We're gonna have to move on to another song," like that. But this year he Instagrammed a photo of him before he was about to go out for a gig doing like, I think it was like a crossword puzzle or adult colouring in Sudoku, you know, like something to calm the mind before he went on stage. But it was such a professional who's deep into his career sort of move that, and that's what this album feels like. It's a guy that's, you know, He's at the top of his craft, but he's been doing his craft for a very long time, and he can't tear it up anymore like a young guy because he's not a fucking young guy.
But that's not all that makes him interesting. That's not all that interests him anymore. I mean, that's actually interesting because there was an album, a song that's, I think it's literally called, you know, Philosophical Musings or something, and it was sort of talking about the fact, you know, I don't really feel the I've got so much other shit going on in my life, you know, ripping MCs, you know, frying MCs like a pound of bacon, whatever it was that Vanilla Rice said. Isn't, you know, job one on the job list anymore.
On your list.
But literally the song afterwards was Diamond Hammer, which is entirely about Brian MC's like a pound of bacon. It's just ripping them up and just tearing them new ones left, right and centre. And not even being that particularly interested in it because you're so out of their league.
I highly recommend if you like that sort of thing is listen to Move on the Pavement with Bias B and Lazy Grey, which is a classic old school song. So SBS has co-opted Viceland in Australia. Like they're the Viceland sort of Australian outshoot. And they had this little young white boy.
Viceland have a channel on Sky and here in New Zealand as well.
They had a little white, young, sort of 19, 20-year-old white reporter do a piece about hip-hop in Australia and how it's more diverse. Which is a great thing because hip hop in Australia is much more diverse than it used to be. However, at the same time, they to illustrate the fact that hip hop was more diverse, they fucking burnt down the last generation of hip hop and said all it is fucking racist dudes rapping about barbecue and beers. And to illustrate that, they put Lazy Grey's "Have a Beer" video underneath what he was saying. And it's like, seriously, do some fucking research. Like Elephant Tracks, who have been around as long as anyone, are one of the most fucking poster boys for diversity. The guys from that crew in Brisbane are one of the most diverse fucking crews kicking around. And okay, they're not the style of hip hop that is, you know, the new style of hip hop, which is, I think, actually less diverse because it's aping more American-style hip-hop than having its own voice.
And the production's getting slicker and slicker and the beats are getting more convergent.
But why fucking burn Lazy... Like the blowback was just amazing in the hip-hop community because Lazy Grey, while he's not the Hilltop Hoods and he's not Earth Boy or any of those big names, he is like he's known, but he's not known. He is revered. Like, if you're an MC that knows his shit, you know that Lazy is just one of the gods because he is. He can tear it up better than fucking anyone. He's one of those guys that never went mainstream.
Is there also no understanding of the fact that it might not have been an entire fucking kiss the flag embracement of bullshit Bogan spirit? It might
well,
have been
and that was
a little
that,
bit ironic.
The big fucking mistake that they made was saying that there is a lot of white racist hip hop supporters, which is absolutely fucking true. But hip hop in Australia,
not as grey.
Hip hop in Australia, from the artist perspective, is one of the most fucking woke areas of fucking music in Australia you will ever find. Seth Century getting on his Facebook page and burning the fucking thing down, saying, any of you cunts who believe X, Y, and Z can fuck off out of my, you know, out of my Facebook feed and don't bother buying any of my music again. Like, seriously, do 10 minutes of research and fucking learn your history. Jesus, it was just disgraceful. But anyway, that's media for you. But I just felt really sorry for Lazy because, like, he's one of those guys that would give, you know, 5 minutes to any aspiring hip-hop artist that's coming through. And to see him treated like that was pretty fucking poor.
Was that a visiting hit job or was that a domestic story?
No, it was a domestic story. It's the SBS.
No, but it's Viceland. Viceland do their own.
It's Viceland. It was an Australian. It was an Australian presenter and Australian producer,
so
as far as I understand.
Vice do their own production. They make their own stuff. But I mean, part of their whole Vice's shtick is to be deliberately confrontational.
Yeah, look, the premise was fine. The premise was actually not that wrong. It's just like,
wrong dude to illustrate.
Yeah, whoever was their researcher didn't do
who
that.
Who should have they picked?
The focus should have been on the people that, like, you know, the people at festivals that go to the shows and have a certain attitude, because that is definitely a thing and that exists. Especially,
I think that's fascinating is that the audience gravitates to a band whose message they don't fucking understand.
Yeah, that's
right.
See
this a little bit with punk rock, but there's even more so with hip-hop because the lyrics are so much more front and centre.
And the thing is that there would have been a really interesting story if you'd talked to people like the Hoods or even old school people like Lazy and Bias and the realisation that, you know, the people coming to your shows are not the people that you really want at your shows. And that happened when it went from being an underground, like that was never a thing when it was an underground thing. That happened when it tipped into the mainstream.
So it is the Hood's fault. Fucking Adelaide. Adelaide. But that's actually a really interesting thing, is that what drew those people to that sound? Given that hip-hop in Australia had always been, prior to that, had always been, oh, that fucking Seppo rubbish. What are you fucking listening to, that fucking Seppo rubbish? Listen to some fucking Australian music, like fucking guitars, mate. We invented guitars. We fucking invented guitars, hey? Yeah, nah, good. The point being that appropriation of music is fucking ridiculous, and there is no music that is uniquely American, and no music that isn't uniquely American, because all of the forms of music that people had enjoyed previously had probably come through America anyway, because of the importance of jazz and blues to rock and roll that informed all the fucking chart hits from 1950 whatever to today.
Yeah, and that's the thing, like. There was a really fascinating story there if you bothered to do.
If you were good at your job, if you weren't a minimum wage idiot.
Yeah, look, I've been out of the fucking industry for a decade and I could have fucking given you decent background that would have pointed.
You're not out of the industry, you're a journalist now.
I don't know if a podcaster is really a journalist. But,
citizen journalist.
But do you know what I mean? Like, go and talk to Howe from the hip-hop show. Like, hey, look, off the record, just go and have a chat to him. He'll fucking point you in the right direction. The stupidity of, you know, it was like a hot take without bothering to do any research, which, okay, on Twitter.
Or nobody
fine.
Wanted to talk to them.
Well, I think they had an initial perspective with some young artists that they wanted to promote, and they fitted the rest of the narrative around it. And it's
so
just lazy.
Who were they bumping?
Some really young guys from Western Sydney, which, like, and you can't blame them because, you know, they're young guys, and if you're young in the music industry, you'll take whatever fucking promo you're going to get. But it's just not a narrative that fits, especially in fucking Sydney, where you've got Elephant Tracks pushing diversity in music more than any other fucking genre in Australia.
Yeah, that might actually end up hurting them in the long run if they were seen to be. Well, I don't know to what extent they were integrated in the shitting on the. On the elders, but that's, yeah, I don't know about that.
Maybe. I think the fact that
old white just, people rule the world, you will genuflect to us.
I just think they're noobs, and they're going to get, you know, they'll get the pass mark because they're noobs, and you know it's promo. So
stop sounding like my fucking 8-year old.
Noobs,
toots, noobs.
All right, I'm really interested in the classic this week. So. Fucked.
Vice, learn what you're doing. Actually, yeah, Vice Sports is pretty good, but Vice themselves are fucking Muppets.
Just fucking, you know, don't burn legends to the fucking ground without doing your research, please.
However, if you want to give us a free trip to the NBA playoffs, that's cool.
Yes, that's right, because we did apply for that. Yeah. That would be very interesting to see the Balls podcast doing like a podcast straight after a Cavs Warriors game. I would fucking enjoy that. That would be great.
One small problem, I have told my bosses I will not do any more long-haul travel. So in order to not have to do any more long-haul travel, so we might have to not travel.
And I think both our wives would be less than impressed with us taking 2 weeks off to go and watch basketball.
Well,
but anyway.
Well, the more challenging thing is that Mavaf is taking large swathes of July off to go to overseas conferences. So
Maybe you'll do better than me.
Maybe I can steal a week in June. We'll see how that rolls. The classic album for this week, Happy New Zealand Music Month. I'm not doing the Tereo again because I almost landed it last week, and I'm just going to quit while I'm ahead, is Supergroove, who released the album Traction in 1994 off the back of a bunch of successful singles in Signal Malt, which is what Bezos on, in 1992-93. They were kind of a party funk hip hop band.
I did know the single.
Yes.
From.
There's a couple of singles there that you gotta know, and
You gotta know is the one that I was.
It's probably the biggest one, and the other one that's relatively that I also had heard was, oh god, the names escaped me completely. Got to know. Can't get enough. No, Can't Get Enough was actually the bigger. Was the one I'd heard more of, I think. But Scorpio Girls was the other prominent single in New Zealand. Although it's an odd fit with the rest of the album because it's got this massive kind of Pantera riff to it.
When you sent me that playlist on YouTube, because I'm not listening to it on Spotify, I was like, is this track included in the right album? Because this does not sound like the album you were describing. Yeah,
but then the horns start chiming in.
It gets
horns,
into it sort of
cheesy
halfway through.
Raps, white guy, cheesy white dude raps. No, that's the right bit. But it's an odd opener. It's no more reflective of the rest of the sound than you know Chafu's ballad towards the end of the album.
So what year is this?
1994.
So
we were younger.
So this is after Blood Sugar Sex Magik.
Sure. So these kids. So let's. So in their first single came out in 1992. It wasn't actually on this album. It's called Here Comes the Supergroove. They were like, I think I read something in. Actually, I've got it here, ready to fly. The story of New Zealand rock music by David Eggleton, which is a book I picked up in a bargain bin once, and it's actually rather excellent. But it refers to the fact that they were average age 17 in 1992. 1992 was a year after Blood Sugar Sex Magik, but their sound had been informed probably more by James Brown and funk and soul acts of the 60s and 70s. And having played together for quite a few years, effectively as the high school band at their, I think they were like Western Springs College or something. than the chili peppers. So the white sounds like the chili, you know, there's definitely things that you can go, well, that sounds like the chili peppers. I don't know how much the chili peppers were an influence on these guys, because I suppose Mother's Milk and Freaky Styler had been around previously.
I was thinking more Mother's Milk and Freaky Styler, because...
But I'm not sure if New Zealand ever heard of those, because New Zealand in the 80s and early 90s was a, you know, it was a far away world. It just did its own thing.
So I've talked before about a band that was sort of an alley favourite called Glockenspiel, and they sounded very, very much like this, very much like this, which was sort of like a more upbeat funk version of Mother's Milk.
Yeah.
You know, like a more party version of Mother's Milk. Even the way that they integrated the rapping into the funk was very, very Glockenspiel.
What you're telling me is that Glockenspiel were a supergroup tribute act.
Yeah, pretty much.
They just weren't necessarily aware that they were a supergroup.
Yeah, but the funny thing is how the fuck did I not get into this album in period or even close after this period, because I was into New Zealand music. How the fuck did I miss these guys? And this is right in my fucking wheelhouse.
I know, and this album went quadruple platinum in New Zealand.
I've never heard of it, because I knew the single. As soon as the single played, I was like, oh, I know this guy. This is fucking awesome.
I know. Well, I think the fact that it's not available on Australian Spotify might illustrate that there might have been some record label shit that made it hard to find. If I was going to put a bet down, I think it would be safer money than the Warriors winning everything than that Bezo was going to like the Supergroove album.
Mm.
It just kind of went, well, there's brass, there's hip-hop, there's funky guitar. It all fits. All the boxes are ticked. It's from New Zealand. It's not Wellington. It's not fucking Wellington Trumpet Bands. And to be honest, I would pick this album and I was thinking, well, that's about the best New Zealand album I can think of for a classic album. And having listened to it a couple of times this week, I had forgotten how good an album it is, how good it is as an album. There were a couple of weird
solo projects. Like, it was almost like one member of the band's like, I really want to do a song like this. And I was like, well, it doesn't really fit, but sure, okay, no worries.
And I like that about it. And I think the problem was that those tensions were what pulled the band apart after they'd been touring for a year and a half. And it was almost, this band is almost like an illustration of what happens when a band gets all its creative juices out in one album and then explodes. And sometimes that can be better than eking it out over a bunch of albums and slowly fucking radio hitting.
Yeah. Except the thing is, like, a lot like Glockenspiel is this sound. So what did you say this was, 94?
94.
So they were
pretty much done as a going concern by 96.
Yeah, see, this sound was really fucking taken off in the middle of the 90s. Like, that was the thing that I never understood.
It was a complete fuck-up that they fell apart just as they became popular.
Yeah, like, the thing I never understood about Glockenspiel was all Glockenspiel needed was one friendly person at Triple J that just like, this band is the Australian Chili Peppers and we're going to push that angle, and like, you know, people like Chili Peppers are just going to go, oh, this is like Chili Peppers, let's fucking get on this, and they would have been fucking huge. But they never broke, they never made it into the mainstream. And
yeah, what Australian Chili Peppers did though?
No, nothing did. That's what I find amazing because
Prison Dogs. I'm trying to think of somebody who was pushing that 28 days. I mean, who was? And that was from Scar.
But that's the thing is, I think in the Australian, like Triple J has a diminished amount of power now. But in the mid 90s. If you were outside the rock mainstream in Australia,
it's diminished amount of power. It's got higher ratings than it's ever had.
Yeah, I think there's other ways for niche bands.
They're not gatekeepers, but I think their voices.
But
I think but their back voice in the day, as strong if it, as it's ever been.
Oh, yeah, I think their voice is as strong as it's ever been. But back in the day, there was only one way for a glockenspiel or a super groove type band to succeed, and that was Triple J. If Triple J weren't going to push it, you had like Resin Dogs. Resin Dogs got sort of grudging approval from Triple J, but they never were pushed the way Hilltop Hoods were pushed.
Yeah. Friends got banned from Triple J for a while, and which made it very ironic when the lead singer and the guitarist became their breakfast team.
Yeah. And that was the only way. Like, Glockenspiel now could find a following on Spotify or find a following on YouTube or SoundCloud or somewhere. They could eke out a career or a following.
It'd be a marginal niche in existence, but that's music.
Yeah. But look, it seems like bands can exist quite happily on marginal. Look, a marginal niche existence can be more than enough to keep you paid, you know, as a job. You've just got to find enough of that niche to follow you, I guess.
Man, we're all living marginal niche existences. Wake up, sheeple. Follow the skies. The Illuminati era, something like fucking lizard people. Stop sniffing.
I did like, I was listening to a basketball podcast today and the guy said the Celtics broadcast was like...
It was like InfoWars. I did see that. And it is. Have you ever seen the Celtics?
It is. Oh, it's terrible. It is fucking...
Look, they are
unless you're from Boston and you're sort of steeped...
parameters for reality over there.
Yeah, you're steeped in that thing. Like, it is unlistenable. It is worse than fucking... not Ray Warren. Who am I thinking? Ray Hadley. It is fucking worse than Ray Hadley, and that is fucking saying something. Jesus Christ.
It's worse than Benny Hill, and that's bad enough, as a great man once said.
All right. What do you got for me that's new, Doc?
So it's New Zealand Music Month, and I had great plans to say I'm going to find some New Zealand bands to listen to.
I saw a tweet today that made that less than possible.
So I've spent a lot of time listening to New Zealand alt and indie playlists, and can I just say New Zealand music is fucking shit. Lift your game. It's New Zealand Music Month. Fucking release some music that's decent. I almost picked new album by Clap Clap Riot, who are from Auckland. The problem with Clap Clap Riot is I get them confused with Clap Your Hands Say Yeah, who are not from Auckland. And I get them confused with Cut Off Your Hands, who are from Auckland, I think. And I think all of them should get together and form a supergroup called Shit in Your Hands and Clap. That's all I have to say about them. The other album I was going to pick was by Girls Pissing on Girls Pissing, just to get that in your search record. But I listened to some of Girls Pissing on Girls Pissing, the band. They are a band. They're from Auckland. No surprises. No trumpets. Not from Wellington. And it's unlistenable shit. But ironically, it's not a listenable piss, which is what you might expect from Girls Pissing on Girls Pissing. And we're not having any of that. But I did. I'm going to throw a couple of Kiwi releases from 2017 into the mix. I'm not sure if they're on your Spotify, but they are on mine, and I can probably find.
Sorry, what was the name of the band?
I haven't actually said the name of the band yet.
Oh, okay.
I was just going to say, I can probably find album streams if you can't find them on your Spotify. So the first album I want to pick is by a band called Dad Jokes, because I think that fits the aesthetic of this podcast.
Sure.
I can't remember the name of the album. And the other album I was going to pick.
The album is called Watch Out for the Bullies.
That's the one. It is on there. The other album I was going to pick is by a band called Teeth. All caps. They're kind of they've got members of the Phoenix Foundation, which is getting alarmingly close to fucking Wellington Trumpet Band territory. So the album and the band are both called Teeth, but the album is Teeth, all in caps.
The Teeth or Teeth?
Just Teeth. It's got five dudes on the cover in black and white.
Okay.
It might not show up. So we'll asterisk that one, and either we'll find a stream that works for outside of New Zealand, or we might just sub it out and replace it with something else. So, New Zealand Music Month, lift your fucking game.
Well,
David Dallas has got a new album. If you want to listen to fucking shitty hip hop that belongs on a Air New Zealand commercial.
No, Teeth. The album is called Teeth. It's just called Teeth. Four That's dudes. Cool. It is there.
It is there. Okay, he's in then.
The classic this week is easy. Let's do the Gurge.
Let's do Def Leppard.
Let's do Def
Leppard. We can't do Def Leppard. We know we can't do Def Leppard until until my husband returns from the war. Until our man returns from the grasp of the mainstream media.
Look, can't his media organization go on strike and then we can get him on the podcast?
No, they basically the team scabbed there. That's why they just got Elizabeth Farrell is fucking going coming.
It is going to drive.
When you're in charge of shit, you can't be a scab.
It is going to drive him nuts that we talk about this every week but never actually review it.
Oh, at some stage we might have to drag him in. But this might involve us having to listen to fucking hysteria.
Yes, I might have, you know, people do that, those sugar detoxes. I might have to do one of those for a couple of weeks.
But after they've poured some sugar on you in the name of nerve. I wish I'd recorded that. I know a man.
I did. That's gonna be the outro for the next 15 weeks. Please go.
That laugh is Stephen Tyler laughing in an elevator. Morning, Mr. Tyler. Going down.
Dear. Yeah, so we'll go with 1997's Unit by Regurgitator for the classic this week. I don't think we need to talk about it anymore because we've talked about it.
Finally! That's good.
If you haven't been playing along for the last month, you need to go and listen to Playing as well, because we'll probably talk about the differences between that first and second album, which is better. A little bit like what we did with the Benz and OK Computer.
And like the Benz and OK Computer, they're completely different styles and concepts and thought processes. And the other problem with these albums is they're so tied up in the experiences that we had when we listened to them. Like Two Playing elicits a whole string of memories and experiences and there's a different string of memories and experiences that Unit elicits.
Well, the fact that Unit, that I went and saw these guys for the tour for Unit, and it's in my top three live music experiences.
They were a fucking great live band. I actually have a I got a DVD on Valve Records website when I was getting the Stalkers EP, getting a new copy of the Stalkers EP, which we had as a classic album a while ago last year. I picked up the DVD of the band and the Bubble, like the edited highlights,
Channel V thing,
Channel V react, which was a fantastic experiment, even if it did break Jabbo's brain. But they did a live show at the end, so I've got a live DVD of the Gurge. I must watch that. I'll see if I can get around to watching that. But they were always a really fucking, even when they were doing albums I didn't like that not particularly well executed hip hop album that they did in about 2002, 2001. Was it Ricardo and Rodriguez against the
against the world against
the fucking robots of Mars? So maybe that was Ziggy Stardust. There were like one or two tracks on were good, and most of it was shit. But even when they were touring that in like, because when you know we saw them in 2002, 2003, they were touring that album, but they were still able to make those songs not suck. They were was that the era Naquan was still had the keytar.
Yeah.
Which was gloriously 80s and very quiet.
Oh, yeah. No, they were a kick-ass live band. Absolutely. All right, Doc. That was cool. Oh, it's got nothing really to do with... Oh, actually, it does have a bit to do with music because this guy was very into music and actually had a Spotify playlist that you could play with reading his autobiography. But... Australian journalist Mark Colvin died this week, and he was a voice that I had listened to through a lot of my adult life. He was a current affairs journalist, mainly on radio with the AM and PM programs. But he was just, and he was a funny guy because he was one of the first sort of old school media guys to really embrace Twitter.
Oh,
and
fuck. Did he adopt Twitter? He was Captain Twitter.
Yeah,
he was Australian Twitter there for a long
time. He was right into it, which was such a weird thing for an old.
I couldn't follow him because he was just a fire hose. He was amazing.
Yeah. Amazingly insightful guy, a guy that suffered because for the people that don't know the story, he was a foreign correspondent in Rwanda when he was in his mid-20s and contracted some weird tropical disease that fucking destroyed his kidneys and basically suffered through enormous pain throughout the rest of his life, never let it really affect him.
He died at 65, so there's your 40 years of
yeah, really good and quality that's, and of that's, life there. And that's after a kidney transplant. So
yeah, you got an extra 4 years out of the kidney transplant.
But anyone who's interested in him, go and have a look. The ABC did a fantastic website today with like little anecdotes from all the people that had ever had any interaction with him, and you could just click through it for an hour. Some of them lead to longer form stories that have gone into like, you know, the ABC website and stuff. Some of them just little anecdotes, but man, he is an amazing guy. That the people that he touched in his life was just such a wide variety of people, but he loved his music, absolutely loved music. So there's a little
Twitter link was back a to fairly it. Raw place for the last 24 hours. And it's odd because I don't have any great connection with the fellow. But,
well, you don't have access to Australian radio, so
no, I do. I just don't listen to Australian radio.
Yeah.
But now I used to have to listen to PM and AM on the way to school, so I'm familiar with quite a lot of his work in that context. But it was very clear that there was some very raw wounds that you know it was. I mean, it's when someone's got a chronic illness. You never, I've got a bit of experience with this with my family, is that you're always in the back of your mind, you know they're going to go at some point. But when they go, it's still shocking and horrible and debilitating. And it was the outpouring of grief, but also shared experience. Also, it went very quickly to, here's a great thing he did, or here's a great time that we had, or here's a great experience that he brought to us. It went to the celebration exceedingly quickly.
Yeah,
I figure that's a mark of if you've put good things into the world, if that's what people are sharing soon after you're no longer around, clearly you've done a good thing.
It was eerily familiar to the John Clark, reaction, and I just feel that the two people that really held our leaders and our political system to account and questioned more than anything are gone in 1 year is not that great for Australian the Australian media landscape. That's all I can say.
That's all right. Don't worry. Ernie Merrick is now in charge of an Australian side. As soon as he quits, Turnbull's gone. You know how this shit works. Precedent.
And there's a callback for you.
Look, can I just give one shout out, which is an important shout out because it's a shout out I've been thinking about for a lot of years. Can I give a shout out to Dr. Dexter Holland? You might know him as the dude out front of the Offspring. Mm. Dexter Holland was doing a PhD in the molecular
today,
biology of the HIV virus in the early 90s. But he put all that in the bin, or he put it on hold when he went out when his shitty punk rock band's third album suddenly became popular. We're very unlikely to ever have Smash as a classic album because it's really not. But it's pretty good. And they managed to forge a long career out of it. And at the end of it, he went, oh, PhD. Fuck, I should finish that. Very Brian May of him, too. The thing about it is, it's amazing to think how far his field, the fucking molecular biology of the fucking HIV virus, has gone since 1993. 1993, people used to die of AIDS in Western countries.
Yeah.
I mean, when Magic Johnson got the HIV virus, everyone just went, oh, he's fucked. Good night. Thanks for coming.
Well, one of the big things in the US with the changes to all the healthcare laws is the fact that they're not going to support HIV until it becomes AIDS, because that's one of the big things that is one of the big changes in the fact that they treat you, now you treat HIV, so you don't
drugs
treat
are fucking oh that's horrific.
Mm. Oh yeah, it's stupid, but like that's like one little notch on the post of the amazing amount of things that America is managing.
Well,
to fuck
the
up
people who voted for Trump probably still think HIV is something that God gave the gay people as punishment for being sodomites. Mm.
Look, so I'm fully convinced that the NBA next year is going to be all Canadian. They're just going to operate out of Canada.
Have you seen the Rockets play? That's going to suck.
They'll be the Toronto Rockets next year. It'll be fine.
The Toronto, Vancouver. Who gets to play in Edmonton? Well, Edmonton are probably just the cities that Edmonton's fucked. San Antonio's fucked.
Actually, I've got a really good mate that is Canadian, so I might get her to trot out an analogy for all 32 NBA teams next week. We'll see how we go.
I reckon there won't be a Miami.
Well, yeah, there's probably not too many places people getting around in bikinis in Canada. That's true.
Oh, well, Vancouver gets nice in the summer, but it doesn't get that nice.
Mm.
Anyway, shouts to because when I started my PhD, I was very aware that the lead singer of Offspring had started a PhD and hadn't finished it, and I finished mine before he got his, so fuck off. But I'm very impressed that he actually ended up getting his in the end.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, like, why the fuck would you bother going back and doing it other than it's an impressive thing to do? So,
well, if you start something, you've got to finish it.
That's true.
I mean, you hang out with people who have PhDs.
Look,
I mean breed with.
I started a podcast with you and I still haven't finished it.
I started a joke. That started not very many people laughing.
See you, Doc.